Right. The last thing I think we discussed last week, correct me if I'm wrong, was the klala on Beit Eli, that's how it would manifest itself, and the suggestion that lo yezakem b'yamav b'veito, what that means, the two possibilities of zaken being old age and zaken being ruler, leader, zikna, or zaken in the sense of the zaken, zikne ha'ida. And then I think we spent some time talking about sort of how that affected the house of Eli, or interpreted that to reflect the notion of the position of the Kohen Gadol, the idea that it, not just a klala of age per se, but also on the role of Eli as the Kohen Gadol in the Beit HaMikdash, and how that lineage of the Kohen Gadol would be taken away from him and shifted back from his household to the other branch of the family, namely from the house of Elazar to the house of Itamar to the house of Elazar. And we spent some time tracing the lineage of the house of Eli back through, or forward, to because the cross-reference to the house of Itamar is actually later, by Avyatar, much later in the story. But that tells us already, if we go back from Avyatar all the way back to Eli, traced his lineage, created a bit of a chart, and go all the way back to the house of Itamar, and suggested, I believe at the end we talk about Brit Kunat Olam, mm-hmm. Did I mention that? The idea of Olam being two possibilities, Brit Kunat Olam being eternal, and also, which raises the question, how can you promise Pinchas Kuhuna? Rashi's a suggestion that it means because he wasn't a Kohen beforehand, because of the Pinchas clause, as we affectionately called it, and the alternative, which is that the promise to Pinchas wasn't that he would be the Kohen, but rather that he would be a Kohen Gadol to take over for Elazar, that Kuhunat Olam can mean eternal, but could also mean Elyon. And from that perspective, Brit Kunat Elyon, the Kunat Gdola, which of course can be removed from, and that's the nevuah to Eli, that I had originally appointed Pinchas to be the Kohen Gadol, and I shifted their house away from Elazar, gave it to you, said that you would be your household would be the Kohen Gadol, and now I'm going to take it away from you and give it back to Kohen Ne'eman. All of that essentially is what we talked about, I believe, last week. Yes? No? Mm-hmm. Okay. Excuse me. Apologies to the those listening to the recording. It sounds like an explosion. The last piece of this discussion really it comes out of a brief segue that I mentioned that came in the shiur last week. And it's really a shiur that's connected to other pieces, Yirmiyahu, and in various contexts I have, shiur in Shiloh, shiur in various contexts that I have spoken over the years, I have shared with you a thought related, some of you, a thought related to the calculations of the House of Eli. It's a thought that actually I first heard from Rav Medan a number of years back. But since it's so relevant to our discussion here, I thought I would share it with you. Again, if it's review or if it's repetition, then consider it a review. And if it's if you haven't heard it yet, then you'll hopefully appreciate it the first time. So either way. But we need to start with the question of this Gezerah on the house of Eli and how it gets manifested beyond the Kohen Gadol issue. Right, we talked about one aspect of it, namely the Kohenah Gdolah last week. The other side of it is this notion of Zikna. Notion that lo yezakem b'vetcha kol ayamim, that they won't have old age in the household, and how that is translated. So, in the end, the last single reference to the house of Eli as the Kohen Gadol we saw was Avyatar. Avyatar is the survivor of the destruction of Nov Ir HaKohanim. and in, and I showed you this last week, when he is, quote-unquote, deposed from his position of Kohen Gadol, Melachim Aleph Perek Bet, Perek Bet, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Pasuk of Gimel is where he takes revenge against Adoniyahu for the rebellion of Adoniyahu against David and against Shlomo. And then in Pasuk of Vav, Perek Bet, Melachim Aleph, Perek Bet, Pasuk of Vav. Ule Eviatar HaKohen, Amar HaMelech, to Eviatar HaKohen, the king said, Anatot Lech El Sadecha. Go back to Anatot. Ki ish mavet ata. You are ish mavet, meaning we're guilty of an offense for which ish mavet, you should be killed. You should be killed. Uvayom ze lo amitecha, but I'm not going to kill you today. Ki nasate taron Hashem Elokim lifnei David avi. Because you carried the Aaron before my father. And you suffered together with him as he suffered, you suffered. So I will spare your life, but rather I will exile you back to Anatot. Vayigaresh Shlomo et Eviatar miyot kohen laHashem. Shlomo expelled him from being a kohen to Hashem. Lemale et var Hashem asher diber beit Eli Bishilo, as a fulfillment of that gezeirah that Hashem had decreed on the house of Eli, the last piece of it is, in this regard, as the Kohen serving in the Mikdash, that aspect of it is fulfilled here against Eviatar, and that's where the shift in the Kohen Gadolah takes place from the house of Itamar back to the house of Eleazar. But in so doing, there's this interesting reference to him and to the declaration, right? You're no longer from Nov, was the city where he served as the Kohen by the Mizbeach. Now he's being exiled to, expelled from his position as Kohuna, he's being exiled to go home. Go home. I'm not going to kill you, I'm going to send you home. Where is home? Anatot. And Anatot is an interesting city because Anatot has a history related to the Kohuna. I mentioned this briefly last week. Where does Anatot fit into the picture? Take a look at the beginning of Sefer Yirmiyahu. Right at the beginning, Perek Aleph. Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu min ha-Kohanim asher ba-Anatot be-Eretz Binyamin. So the first thing we are told about Yirmiyahu ha-Navi, we've now jumped close to 400, give or take, excuse me?
I mean, it's fair, is that the good age?
Yeah, we're going to get there. So we're now about 400 years into the future. Right? We're into 400 years into the future, the story of the of we're into the period of Churban Bayit Rishon. And we are introduced to Navi Yirmiyahu, Men Chilkiyahu, Min HaKohanim Asher B'Anatot. So the first thing we are told about Yirmiyahu is that Yirmiyahu is from the house of Anatot. Now, by and of itself, or from the city of Anatot, is a Kohen from the city of Anatot. By and of itself, that's interesting fact, but the irony of Yirmiyahu's lineage being connected to the city of Anatot, where the last time Anatot is referenced is in the fact when Eviatar is expelled from the Kohuna, from the house of Eli, he is exiled to his household, to his hometown of Anatot. There's a certain line that's drawn that links Eviatar as a remnant of the house of Eli, expelled, not killed, but expelled because of the Gzeirah, the house of Eli, and expelled to the city of Anatot. And 400 years later, who is the Navi that arises out of the to accompany the story of the Churban Beis HaMikdash is Yirmiyahu HaNavi Asher Me HaKohanim Asher BaAnatot. In fact, I think there's even... So the assumption is that he is, in fact, a descendant of Eviatar. He's a Kohen. He's from Anatot. We don't necessarily know that for a fact, but it is a reasonable assumption. Yirmiyahu's identity as a Navi Kohen from the city of Anatot is not tangential. It's very much part of who he is and what he is. If you take a look, at the end of Perek Yud Aleph in Yirmiyahu, when at one point or another, if you know the story of Yirmiyahu has a very hard time conveying his message. His message is not an easy one for the people to swallow. His message included several very difficult nevuot, including the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash itself.
The king would rather throw him in jail.
The king would rather throw him in jail. The people would rather persecute him. They tried to kill him several times. His message was very unpopular. So at one point or another, the end of Perek Yud Aleph, Hashem is defending his Navi and threatening to punish those who stood up against him. Lachen ko amar Hashem al anshei anatot hamevakshim et nafshecha lemor lo tinave b'shem Hashem v'lo tamut b'yadeinu. His hometown of Anatot, his own people, had said to him, you shall not prophesy in the name of God, and then you won't die. If you stop prophesying, if you stop saying that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, then we will let you live. These are the Kohanim of Anatot. The Kohanim were directly affected by the Churban. If there is a possibility that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, then it's far more than the house of Eli who is going to be unemployed. Then you're going to have a whole bunch of Kohanim unemployed for forever. And they're not happy about it. And so Hashem responds and says, at the end of Yirmiyahu Perek Yud Aleph, Lachen ko amar Hashem tzvaot, Inani poked alehem habachurim yamutu b'cherev, Bnehem ufnatehem yamutu b'ra'av. I will punish them, I will exact vengeance against them. The young, the men, shall die by the sword. Their sons and their daughters will die by hunger. Usherit lo tielehem, there won't be a remnant. Ki avi ra'a al anshei anatot shnat kudatam. And I will bring this calamity upon the people of Anatot. Because they were saying to Yirmiyahu, who was one of them, so Anatot, as a city of Yirmiyahu's hometown in which he functioned, is very much part of the story of Yirmiyahu. He walks around with the identity of Navi Hashem Anatot, the Navi Kohen from the city of Anatot, and therefore from the house of Eli. Why is that significant? It plays an interesting role. We're talking about the story of Eli. The symbol of Eli's household as the symbol of that which brought about the destruction of Shiloh plays an interesting role in the story of Yirmiyahu himself. To start with, I prepared for you an interesting conversation in a couple of sources in the Gemara, which raises an interesting conversation. For how many years was this Gezerah on the house of Eli in effect? How long can we trace the conversation about the intensity of the house of Eli, of the punishment on the House of Eli. So if you look at the first source, which is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, this is Beit Sheni, post Beit Sheni. Now we're talking about from Yirmiyahu Kohen Anatot. We're going to come back to him. We're now talking about Beit Sheni and post Beit Sheni. We're talking about 500 years later, even than that. So now we're about 1,000 years after Eli, and we find the following conversation. Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yoshaya have become mishtakid Rabbi Yochanan lemismechinu. Yochanan was anxious to ordain Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Hoshaya. Rabbi Yochanan wanted to give them smicha. V'lo have mistaya milta, but it, for whatever reason, he was unable to do so. Have komitztaer tuva, and he was very distressed by it. Amulai, so they said to him, lo nitztaer mar, don't be too distressed. Why? The anan min debet Eli ka'atinan, because we are descendants of the house of Eli. Therefore, what? The Amr Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman Amr Rabbi Yochanan, minayin she'ein nismachin lebeit Eli. How do we know that there could not be smicha to anybody from the house of Eli? You couldn't give the original smicha that went back to Moshe Rabbeinu, the original what we call biblical smicha. You couldn't give somebody smicha from the house of Eli. Shneimar lo yezaken beveitcha kol hayamim. The gzera was there would not be a zaken in your household all of your days. My zaken, what is this pasuk referring to? What zaken are we talking about? Ilem zaken mamish, if it means old age literally. So then I have, for that I have a different verse. For that I have the next verse, which is kol marbit betchaya mutu anashim. All of the increase of your house, or those who are born in your house, shall die young, or shall die as men. So therefore, it must mean smicha. Meaning, what's the conversation in this Gemara? What's the issue here?
Zaken.
Correct. Whether zaken means zikna or zaken means zikne ha'ida. Are we talking about the zakenim of the Sanhedrin or are we talking about zikna and old age? So well, we're talking about both. The zikna of old age is based on the pasuk kol marbit betcha yamutu anashim. If that's the case, then the other reference to lo yeh zaken bevetcha means you can't give somebody from the house of Eli position of stature, of srara, of rulership, of a position in the Sanhedrin. Short of it is, he says, if you can't give, if you're unable to find a way to give a smicha, it's not your fault. This is an old issue that's been attached to our lineage, tainted our lineage for many, many generations. We're talking about 1,000 years after the story of Churban Shul. That's one side of the Gemara. You know, and I discussed this the other day with the other group. There was a serious objection raised to the fairness of this gezeira in the house of Eli. After all, it was, you know, what did 400 years later? What did they do to deserve this kind of klala that for which there's no option, there's no opt out? In fact, if you take a look in back to Shmuel, if you take a look at pasuk in Perek Gimel, you'll see that the next Nevuah, which is the next story, it's the Nevuah of Shmuel, in Pasuk Yud Dalid, Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Dalid, it says, in that Nevuah that Hashem tells Shmuel that he's going to punish the house of Eli, so starting with Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'garati lo kishofet ani et beito ad olam. I will instruct him that I will judge his household for eternity. Talking about the house of Eli. Ba'avon asher yada ki mekalalim lahem bana v'lo chiya behem, because of the iniquity that he knew that his sons were kalalim behem banai, his sons were Manav, their sons were cursing or hurting others, and he didn't stop them, he didn't chastise them, v'lochi habahem. V'lachay nishbati levet Eli. I have taken an oath against the house of Eli. Im yitkaper avon beit Eli bezevach uvemincha adola. My oath is that no sacrifice or offering will ever bring atonement for the sin of the house of Eli forever. No amount of zevach, no amount of mincha can ever bring atonement for the iniquity of the house of Eli.
But isn't there a number of generations that people are responsible for the averas of their ancestors?
In the general scheme of things, there's a pasuk that says, "Bekan avon avot al banim ve'al banei banim." Here, it's a different issue. Here the issue is ad olam. 1,000 years later, and we're still identifying the implication of the klala against Beit Eli. Kaper avon Beit Eli bezevach uvemincha ad olam. So here the Gemara says something astounding. If you take a look at the Gemara in source to the second source on the page, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Gemara says something astounding. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Ami v'Ami la'amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni and Rav Yonatan. I think it's the same Rav Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar Rav Yonatan that we had in the previous Gemara. In other words, it's the same generation. We're talking about the Gzeira Beit Eli. It's the same Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rav Yonatan. In the two Gemaras. I don't know if you noticed that. It's the same memra from the same people. Minayin l'gzar din sheyesh imo shvua she'eno nikra. How do I know that if there's a decree that's taken as a gzar din that with an oath, with a shvua, that it can never be rescinded? It can never be, not 4 generations, not 10 generations, not 100 generations. If there's a shvua, if Hashem takes a shvua in that gzar din, it's eternal. To answer your question about 4 generations. Shenemar, v'lachein nishbati lebeit Eli im tkaper avon beit Eli bezevach uvemincha. Never will be atoned forever. Comes along the Gemara and says, Amar Rava, bezevach uvemincha eino mitkaper, ava mitkaper b'Torah. It's true. No sacrifice or offering can ever bring atonement for this sin, for this gzer. But there is a mechanism around it, namely Torah. You can learn Torah, it can compensate for the gzer Beit Eli. Amar Abaye, or Abaye Amar, bezevach uvemincha eino mitkaper, ava mitkaper b'Torah uvegmilut chasadim. It's true. No atonement can be achieved through zevach uvemincha, but it could be achieved through something else. In other words, the emphasis in the pasuk that through no atonement can be achieved through zevach or mincha, through sacrifices and offerings, says Rav and Abaye, you know what? What's the emphasis there? The emphasis there is, since the chait was a chait based on a corruption of the korbanot, you want to bring korbanot from today till tomorrow, you're never going to atone for the problem. Mm-hmm. You want to fix the problem, you got to go back to a whole different approach, namely, Torah gemilas chesed. Now, the pshat of both psukim, both in Perek Bet and in Perek Gimel, is that there's a finality to this gzeira that can't be danced around. That is an uncomfortable position for us philosophically, for the descendants of Eli practically, and for Chazal theologically. There's always an option of tshuva at some point or another. So the answer they offer is to nuance the pasuk. Zevach uvemincha, that's where the limit is. But there are other options. There's Torah, there's Torah Gemilas Chesed. And then the Gemara says, Rabba ve'Abaye midebet Eli ka'ati. Rabba and Abaye, this whole discussion with this, Rabba and Abaye, says the Gemara, themselves are descendants of the house of Eli. Rabba da asak b'Torah chaya 40 shnin. Rabba, who was studious, who learned Torah, so he was able to mitigate the Gezerah Beit Eli and live to the age of 40. Not an insignificant lifespan in that context. Whereas Abaye, the Asak Batorah u'Gmilut Chasadim, he doubled it. He was Osek in Torah and Gmilut Chasad, Chayashit in Shnin. He was Zochah to live to the age of 60. And the Gemara tells a story about a particular family that was suffering from the house of Eli. It was suffering because they were dying young, and they came to one of the Tanaim who said to them, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who said to them, you must be from the house of Eli, go and study Torah, and as a mitigation of the Gzeira of Beit Eli. But already you see that 1,000 years after the story of the Churban of Shiloh, and the Gezerah, the house of Eli, 1,000 years later, they're still living under the pressure of this Gezerah against this house of Eli. We're long past the time of the Beit HaMikdash. We know this is not the Zaken of the Beit HaMikdash. This is the Zikna of old age. This is the other half of the Gezerah. But it's still applicable and still lived in, they still lived in the context of a way of mitigating against it, but at the same time the necessity to mitigate against it because of the ongoing notion that this set in motion a series of events that stayed with us for generations. To some extent, part of that is a reflection on how impactful the Churban of Shiloh was. We've constantly focused on the Eli equation. Eli, Chofni Pinchas, how much of their role has played this out. The piece that I think we're missing and why it's hard for us to understand it is how much of an impact the destruction of Shiloh played in the mindset of Klal Yisrael. Because they're interconnected. House of Beit Eli, the Gzera Beit Eli is interconnected to the Gzera of the Churban of Shiloh. The next, we'll see that more in Perek Gimel, because that's where you, that's where Shmuel connects them directly. But it's all, right, what did the Hashem say to Eli? When is all of this going to start? When are you going to see it fulfilled? When Chofni Pinchas died the same day, and that takes place in Perek Dalet, when the Aron gets captured, and that's the Churban of Shiloh. The Churban of Shiloh is one of the most dramatic moments in Tanakh, and impactful moments in Tanakh. The irony of it is that there's virtually no explicit reference to the Churban of Shiloh in Sefer Shmuel. It's a subject we're going to look at a little bit later when we look at the Nevuot related to the Churban. But there's no explicit description of the destruction of Shiloh and the Mishkan in Shiloh in Sefer Shmuel. The only thing we have reference to is the battle with the Plishtim, the war in which the Aron is taken captive by the Plishtim, and the deaths of Chofni Pinchas. And we have a description of how far north the Plishtim go, including the city, right, the area of Evan Ezra, the area around Shevet Ephraim. Nowhere in the Sefer does it actually say that the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed, and the Kohanim, and, you know, and that whole episode. Even though we're talking about events 1,000 years later that are impacted by the story of the destruction of Shiloh. Where do we know the story of the fall of Shiloh from? We know the battle of the Plishtim, but where is it? Where is the battle of Shiloh explicitly mentioned? The fall of Shiloh explicitly mentioned.
The capture of the Aron was separate from the fall of Shiloh.
It's the same battle. The capture of the Aron is mentioned
outside the Mikdash.
Correct. When we get to Perek Dalet, we're going to talk about what happens. But that's where they lose the battle on the field of the Plishtim. The rest of it is the assumption of the aftermath of the excursion of the incursion of the Plishtim into the heart of Har Ephraim. It's not in Sefer Shmuel. Which the battle is, the description of the fall of Shiloh is not. Our assumption is that Shiloh falls when the Aron is taken captive. That's an assumption. Where does that assumption come from? So the only explicit reference we have to it, to the connection between the Aaron taken captive and the fall of Shiloh, is a pasuk in Tehillim. It's in Tehillim Ayin Chet. Tehillim Ayin Chet. Danny, are you doing Tehillim Ayin Chet in your Tehillim course?
Not yet.
Okay, well, you will get there. Mitzvah Shem?
Yeah. Very quickly incorrect. Only a
son
can say
that,
not
that. Yeah, well, we're going to go there. We're going to start from Pasuk. It's a whole history lesson. It's an entire sequence of history. It goes through from the beginning of the story to the end. It literally goes through the whole story of Jewish history. It's a there's a lot of comparative studies between the story of Chumash as it's reflected in this parak and episodes in Chumash and how they're described differently. It's a very famous discussion. The man and the wandering in the desert and Chet Ego, it's all mentioned in this parak. And then we get to Pasuk, they come into the land of Israel. Historically, they come to the land. There, they worship idols as well. Let's start a few psukim earlier. Let's go back to Nun Aleph. You see Nun Aleph? Vayach kol b'chor Mitzrayim. So, we know we are in the context of Yitziyat Mitzrayim. Vayach kol b'chor b'mitzrayim. Veishit onim b'olei cham. Vayasa katzon amo. You have it?
Okay, got it.
Vayasa katzon amo. He caused his flock to travel in the desert. Vayinagem ka'ede b'midbar. He led them like a flock through the wilderness. Right, swallowed their enemies in the sea. Vayaviem el gvul kodesho, brought them into the boundary of his holy land. Har ze kanta yimino, this mountain which he acquired with his right hand. Vayagarish mifnehem goyim, vayapilem bechevan nachala, he expelled the nations that were there before you, he gave you the land as an inheritance. Vayashken ba'olehem shiftei Yisrael. He caused to dwell in their tents the tribes of Israel. So what have we described so far? Excuse me?
Kibush
Haaretz, notion that they come into the land of Israel and they settle there. Vayanusu. Vayamru et Elohim Elyon. Sorry, Vayanasu. They tried, tested God, rebelled against him. Ve'edotav lo shamaru, they didn't guard or keep his laws. Vayisogu vayivgedu k'avotam, they rebelled, they worshipped like idols, like their forefathers. Nebchu k'keshet remiya, God got angry at them. Mayach isuhu, that's basically one pasuk all of Sefer Shoftim. Right? Mayach isuhu bebamotam. They angered God with their high places, ubefsilehem yakniuhu, and caused their and made him zealous or jealous with their idols. Shema Elokim vayit abar, God heard and got angry. Vayimas meod beYisrael, and he rejected Israel. How does it manifest? Vayitosh mishkan shilo. Ohel shiken ba'adam. He, what is vayitosh mishkan shilo? Abandoned the mishkan in Shiloh, his tent that where he had dwelt amongst men. Vayiten lashvi uzo v'tifarto b'yad tzahar, allowing his strength and his glory to be captured by the enemy. What are we talking about? The Aaron. Vayasger lacherev amo, allowed his land to be given over to the sword, his people, uvenachaloto itabar, and angry at his nachalot, bachurav achla esh, uvutulatav, uvutulotav lo lalu, youth consumed by the fire, kohanav bacherev nafalu, his kohanim were killed by the sword, v'amonotav lotifkena, and their widows could not cry, for they too were destroyed, v'yikatz ki yashen Hashem, ki gibor mitonem miyayin, v'yach tzarav achor chepat olam natan lamo, and then Hashem awoken against his enemies, and pushed back his enemies ultimately, but he had already rejected v'yimas ba'ol Yosef, at that point, rejecting the history of the Mishkan and Shiloh, which was in Ephraim, and Shevet Yehuda, choosing the Shevet of Yehuda, and David HaMelech Yerushalayim, and rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. So all of this ultimately leads to the building of the Beit HaMikdash in replacement of Shiloh. That's the message of this parak. Shiloh falls when? When does Shiloh fall? When the Aron is taken captive. Which makes sense when you think about the fact that the Aron represents the Shekhinah. If you take the Shekhinah out of the Mishkan, what's left? It's an empty shell. When Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel describe the imminent Churban, a Bayit Rishon, of the Beis HaMikdash, well, how does it start? It starts by the exile of the Shekhinah. When the exile, Masa Merkava of Yechezkel, when the Shekhinah goes into exile, what's left is an empty shell and therefore is easily destroyed by the enemy. That's precisely what happens with the Aron. They take the Aron out of the Mishkan, they take it into battle, it gets captured, and the rest of it is the fall of Mishkan Shiloh. So if we talk about the impact that the fall of Shiloh has, right, not only on the house of Eli, but on the mindset of Israel, the whole context of the transition between the period of the Mishkan and the period of Beit HaMikdash is carried over with the mentality that this is all in the aftermath of the destruction of Shiloh.
Sin is different here. Here it's emphasizing the Avodah Zarah as opposed to the corruption of the Mishkan.
Maybe, but it's not really... different emphasis, perhaps. Perhaps. 400 years later, approximately, 400 years later, Yirmiyahu is going to come back to the people. And remember, Yirmiyahu is from what city? Anatot.
400 years after the fall of Shiloh.
After the fall of Shiloh, which is basically, give or take, we'll see the numbers in a moment, but give or take, Yirmiyahu is 40 years before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, so 300 and something years later. And Yirmiyahu is standing there telling them that the Beit HaMikdash is threatened by, the end of Bayit Rishon period, the end of Sefer Malachim, right? All of the idolatry of Sefer Shoftim has now moved from the grassroots countryside into the establishment of the Malchus. Part of the transition from the world of the Shefet to the world of the Melech is that you now have a Malchus that can be held accountable for the state of the people. What does Yirmiyahu say to the people? Perek Zayin. Adavar Asher Aya. Sorry. I didn't clarify that. Adavar Asher Aya Yirmiyahu Me'et Hashem Lemor. Perek Zayin, Hashem comes to Yirmiyahu and he says to him, Yirmiyahu, I have a job for you. Amod b'shar bet Hashem. Go and stand where?
The entrance,
the gate of the Beit HaMikdash. V'karat Hashem at hadavar hazeh. Amarta, shimu dvar Hashem kol Yehuda ba'im b'sharim ha'elo lishtachavot la'Hashem. Go stand at the Beit HaMikdash and I want you to tell them the following. Komar Hashem Tzvakot Elokei Yisrael. Hetivu darchechem uma'al alechem. Improve your ways. Improve your deeds. If you do, ashakna etchem b'makom hazeh. I will. What will I do?
Cause you to dwell in this place.
Do you remember the language in Sefer in the Perikat Tehillim, when Hashem, how Hashem caused Israel to dwell in tents? Vayashken ba'alehem shivta Yisrael. Lahashkin, to place them in their tents, to cause them to dwell. But the play on words here is the word shachen, which means to dwell, but it's also a reference to the Mishkan, which is the place of the dwelling of the Shechina. Correct. Al tiftuchu lechem al divrei hasheker lemor, heichal Hashem, heichal Hashem, heichal Hashem hem. Don't listen to these false prophets who say to you, this is heichal Hashem. What does heichal Hashem mean?
Remember
the God.
The house of God. Right. The difference
is,
heichal is structure, stature, building. This is God's house. What are we worried about? It's God's house. Don't be so sure of yourself. If you will improve your ways, if you will treat each other fairly, treat each other justly, meaning, ger yatom ba'amalad lo tashoku, do not oppress the widow or the orphan. What was the chait of Chofni Pinchas? At the core of it?
The woman.
Right, Nebuch, the poor women who come in after childbirth and who can't bring their korban because there isn't enough meat on a bird compared to the ox. Right? If you just judge each other fairly, ger yatom ba'amalad lo tashoku, do not oppress the widow, the stranger, the orphan. V'dam naki. Al tishpachu b'makom hazeh. Do not spill innocent blood in this place. V'acharei alim achirim lo telechu l'ralachem, nor worship idols. Then v'shikanti etchem b'makom hazeh. I will allow you to remain in this place. V'aretz eshenatati l'avotechem l'min olam v'yad olam, land that I gave you for eternity. Hine atem botchim lechem al divrei hasheker. You rely on falsehoods. Levilti ho'il, on that which does not aid you, does not assist you, does not bring you substance, to'elet. Why? Haganov ratzoach v'na'of v'yishaver l'shaker. You're going to steal and kill and commit adultery and swear falsely. To kater la baal and bring offerings to baal, and v'aloch achrei alim achanim ashaloi datem and bring and all kinds of offerings to all kinds of gods that you don't know, and then what are you going to do? Uvatem v'amadatem lefanai b'bayit hazen ashenikrash mi ala, and then you're going to come crawling to me on this Beit Hamikdash and come bringing sacrifices v'amartem mitzalnu and say, oh, it's our problem. We can do whatever we want. Why? Because when it's all said and done, after the gneva and the retzicha and the ifo and everything else that's there, right? Then you come to the Beit Hamikdash, a couple of sacrifices and a couple of chatas and a couple of ashrams, and you wave a magic wand and you're done. Which was precisely what
Eli was telling his sons, you can't do.
Correct. That was precisely what Eli said to his sons. Eli said to his sons, it's not a problem. You want to sin against man? It's not a big deal. Why? Because after that, you come to Beit HaMikdash, you bring a couple of sacrifices, you pray to God, and you're done. Whereas if you sin against God, you're in trouble. What does Yirmiyahu say to the people? You know, almost the exact same words. What was Yirmiyahu's message? If you want to see, you kill and you murder and you commit adultery and you do all kinds of terrible things, and then you think you can just come to the Beit HaMikdash and bring a sacrifice and be done? The formula has been tried. Hundreds of years ago, they worked through that formula. So that you can go and fulfill all of these terrible things. Hamearat paritzim haya bayit hazeh, asher nikrash shmi alav b'nechem. Is this house that my name is attached to, has it become a Me'arat Paritzim, also affectionately and famously translated as a, what's a Me'arat Paritzim?
Den
of Creeves, den of iniquity, famous expression, right? Me'arat Paritzim haya bayit hazeh? Gam anochi, hineh ra'iti nu mashem. So it says, you know, this formula has been tried. You know when it was tried? 100 years ago it was tried. You know what the result was? The story of the house, the corruption of the house of Eli, the perversion of values of the role of the korbanot. You know what happened to them? What happened to them was the mishkan was destroyed. Ki lechuna el mekomi asher b'shilo. Go look at the place of Shiloh. Go look at the tell of Shiloh, the destruction of Shiloh. The place asher shikanti shmi sham barishana, the place where my name was there, shikanti was there as a mishkan first. U'u et asher asiti lo mipnei ra'ata mi'israel. Go look what I did to Shiloh because of this sin, this exact concept. Ve'ata, says Yirmiyahu, Yan asotchem et kol amasim ha'ela ne'um Hashem, because you have done all of these terrible things. Va'adaber lechem ashkem b'daber, you have said these, I have come to you morning and evening, I completely, v'loshim atem, I'm coming to you all day long, every day, and you don't listen. Ve'kratchem v'lo nitem, I've called out to you, you do not answer me. Therefore, says Yirmiyahu, v'asiti labayit asher nikra shmi alav, asher atem botchim bo, I will do to this house that my name is upon, this house which you rely on, v'lamakom asher natati lachem alavotachem, and this place that I've given to you, what will I do to this place? Kasher asiti l'shiloh. Exactly that which I did to Shiloh. And I will scatter you the way I scatter the northern kingdom of Ephraim. This is the very first nevuah Yirmiyahu is given that explicitly threatens the destruction of the Mikdash. Historically, up until this point, he's been dancing around all kinds of other issues. This is the first nevuah that's explicit, when he says, I will destroy this house. Vasiti lo kasher asiti l'shilo. Alright, the rest of this parak I will skip, but suffice it to say that they are not happy with Yirmiyahu in the aftermath of this nevuah, and the result is that they threaten to kill him, to destroy him, to take it away from him. There's a whole there's a whole aftermath to this perek. You see it more in perek of Vav. Take a look for a second in perek of Vav. I'm not going to get too involved right now in the conversation, in the structure of Sefer Yirmiyahu, but there are nevuot of Yirmiyahu that get repeated. Not because the nevuah repeats, but because the story is told from two different vantage points. At the beginning of the Sefer, there's all the nevuot at length. Towards the middle of the Sefer, you have a section where the same nevuot are relayed to us in the context of the historical events surrounding them. So this same nevuah appears in Perek Chavav, Bereshit Mamlechut Yehoyakim ben Yoshiyahu Melech Yehuda, the beginning of the reign of Yehoyakim. Haya Advar Hazeh Me'et Hashem Lemor. Komar Hashem Amod B'Chatzar Bet Hashem B'Dibarta Al Kol Arei Yehuda Habayim L'Ishtachavot Bet Hashem Et Kol Hadolim Asher Tziviticha L'Daber Alehem. Go stand in the entrance to the Bet Hashem and speak to Yehuda, say these words, Al Tigra Davar. Hashem says to Yirmiyahu, speak what I tell you to speak, and do not
leave anything out.
As if Hashem has to say to the Navi, I know how difficult this is going to be. I want you to listen to me very carefully and repeat exactly what I tell you to say. Ulai yishmu, maybe. Maybe there's a chance. V'yashuvu ish midarko hara'a. V'nichamti al hara'a asher nechi choshev lasot mipnei ra'a me'al lehem. Pasuk dalet v'amarta lehem ko amar Hashem im lo tishmu elai lelecha peturati asher netati lifnechem. Here's the tamtzit. Here's the core. Here's the key message of this entire nevuah. All the Perek Zion wrapped up into one pasuk. If you, this you will say, if you don't listen to me, if you don't walk, keep my Torah, to listen to the Nevi'im, who I send to you, Hashkem v'shaloach, every day I send you more Nevi'im, kishilo. I will do to this bayit what I did to Shiloh. Now here you'll see the response. V'yishmu ha'kohanim v'nevi'im v'chol ha'am et Yirmiyahu medaber et ha'dvarim ha'ele v'beit Hashem, when the Kohanim, remember the Kohanim who wanted to kill him? In Anatot, his hometown, Perek, right, there's a separate nevuah that has to be told to the people of Anatot that they're going to be punished. Talked about that at the beginning of the shiur today. Vayishmu akonim v'anevim v'chol ha'am et Yirmiyahu medaber et hadvarim ha'ele v'beit Hashem v'hiki chalot Yirmiyahu ledaber. When Yirmiyahu's finished, v'yitpesu oto akonim v'anevim, the Kohanim and the Nevi'im grabbed him. What do they say to him? Mot tamut. This is treason. It was treason. For all intents and purposes, what Yirmiyahu was saying was treason. They accused him of treason. They wanted to execute him for treason. Ultimately, his life was spared. But understand that the threat of the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, which is also a threat to the integrity and the independence of the Malchus of Am Yisrael, is articulated by Yirmiyahu in the language of and the chait identified as the core chait for which the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in Perek Zion is formulated in a language that is almost exactly the same language that Eli used in reverse to explain to his sons what they were doing wrong, and in so doing give us the insight as to why this occurred in the way it did. So, up to this point, what I've tried to do is show you that the story of the destruction of the house of Eli and the destruction of Shiloh is so impactful. It's the symbol. It's their Tisha B'Av. Remember that from the day they enter into the land of Israel, there's about 400 years or so, give or take, till all of this is occurring. They've been living in the assumption that this can never be destroyed. And when it gets destroyed as a Mishkan, they build the Beit HaMikdash. Now they're sure that this can never be destroyed, right? The Mishkan could be destroyed. The Mikdash could never be destroyed. Comes along the Yirmiyahu and says, I've got news for you. Mishkan, Mikdash, you think it makes any difference to me? I did this to Shiloh. I can do this to the Mikdash. And so the symbol of the destruction of the house of Eli is really the symbol of the Churban of the Mishkan, which transforms into the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, which for us is Tisha B'Av. It's all interconnected. Their Tisha B'Av was Shiloh. That's how devastating it was, maybe in some ways even more.
Even though the people really weren't going there, and they were really upset and disgruntled, and they were still upset with it.
I think it's in the aftermath. It's far more impactful than, you know. It's like when you take even the Beis HaMikdash, right? But at this point in time, how many people are going to the Beis HaMikdash? And the Beis HaMikdash is also a den of iniquity. It's also abandoned. It's also, and Menashe had closed it for 70 years, right? But when it gets destroyed, suddenly you realize how much more devastating it was. And it's also, don't forget, destroyed not just in the context of the building collapses, right? They didn't implode it. It's a major battle with the Plishtim. The Plishtim are encouraged. Their incursion is all the way up to Ephraim. They lose the land of Israel. They threaten the loss of independence. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed together with an exile of the Malchus and the exile of the people. They're all interconnected. It's not just the building that's destroyed. It's the threat of coming this close to the destruction of Klal Yisrael. There's a famous Chassam Sofer, and I forgot the location of the tshuva, but there's a famous Chassam Sofer where he writes that had the Beis HaMikdash been destroyed, but Israel not exiled from the land, lo haya ra kol kach. It wouldn't have been so bad. It's not the Beis HaMikdash that's at the center of the building that's at the center of the Churban. It's the devastation that comes with it. It's the loss of independence, the destruction of the state of Israel, of Malchut Yisrael, Malchut Yehuda, the exile of the people, the hundreds and thousands and millions of people who were killed. I mean, it's the whole picture. If you read the keynote of Tisha B'Av, you see this again and again. It's not the building that's that we're mourning for. It's the end of the Malchus, the end of the Kohuna, the end of Klal Yisrael, the end of the Shvatim, the Nachal of the land, the people, it's all interconnected.
It's the end of the relationship with Hashem in a certain way.
So that's part of the tension, is can the relationship with God survive the Churban? That's part of the theology of the issue. Can the relationship remain intact post the Churban? That's a whole different issue in the Nevi'im, and part of the struggle that Yechezkel and the Nevi'im struggle with, part of what we struggled with after Bai Cheney. Right.
It's like saying the Brit has come to an end in a certain regard.
It is, right, not but again, I'm going to leave that issue for now because it's much more complicated. Right? The notion that somehow they're conveyed that the Brit does not come to an end even though the building is destroyed, etc. But I want to leave that issue with the Brit because it gets into a more complicated piece. All right. Let me, in the 10 minutes that I have remaining, let me briefly share with you one more observation. This I did on a postscript to a shiur that I gave on Tisha B'Av a couple of years ago, but it's since we're here, since this is the subject, Yirmiyahu, Churban Shiloh, Churban Beis HaMikdash, Beit Eli, I would not do it justice if I didn't add to this discussion one more piece of information, and that's a very simple but important mathematical calculation. What's the mathematical calculation? When does Yirmiyahu recite these infamous words, Kishilo Yabaitase? What is the date of this nevuah for Yirmiyahu? So in Perek Zion we have no date. But the same nevuah appears in Perek Chavav. In Perek Chavav we have a date. The date is Bereshit Mamlachut Yehoyakim ben Yoshiyahu. Why is that significant? So, in order to understand why this is significant, we have to start from a earlier calculation. The Mishkan in Shiloh stood for how many years? We're talking about the fall of Shiloh, right? This is the subject of Sefer Shmuel, is the fall of Shiloh. How do we calculate the years for Sefer Shoftim as a whole and for these events in particular? Are part of the one of the biggest challenges in the understanding the chronology of Tanakh is that we don't have is that there are major gaps in an accurate chronological calculation. Sefer Shoftim, for example, doesn't give us specific years, what occurred when. It gives us approximations. This Shofet reigned for so and so many years. The land was quiet for 40 years. The land was quiet for 12 years. The land was quiet for 3 years. This reign, Shofet, was for 7 years. Are those juxtaposed one to another? Are they sequential to each other? Are they in parallel to each other? We don't have reference points in Sefer Shoftim that we can accurately point to and say this is happening after this and so and so. We have a couple of hints to events of chronological events. One of them is Yiftah. Right. Yiftah, we know as a starting point, is 300 years after Yetziat Mitzrayim. How do I know it's 300 years after Yetziat Mitzrayim? It's actually 300 years. It's actually 340 years after Yetziat Mitzrayim.
Makes sense. So. No, it's
300. Well, it's 300 years since he says it's 300 years since the war with Sichon, right, which is the end of the 40 years. So, right, 300 years. But we don't know what to do with those 300 years. Right? Where do you put everything else into the context of those 300 years? Is it an approximation? Is it an accurate number? That doesn't give us a lot of information. What gives us a very specific anchored piece of information is a pasuk in Sefer Malachim. Pasuk Aleph states that the Beit HaMikdash was founded, the cornerstone to the Beit HaMikdash was built 480 years after Yetzirah Israel. That's an anchored number. That's Sefer Malachim Perek Vav. That is indisputable. Put everything else into there if you want. ויהי בשמונים שנה וארבע מאות שנה לצאת בני ישראל מארץ מצרים, בשנה הרביעית בחודש זיו, הוא החודש השני למלוך שלמה על ישראל, ויבן הבית להשם. The Beit HaMikdash is built in the year 480 from Yetziat Mitzrayim, in year 4 of Malchut Shlomo. Okay. Now, here is the problem. Into this 480 years, we have to put all of the 40 years in the Midbar, all of Sefer Yehoshua, which Chazal identify as, based on Psukim, 14 years, 7 years of conquest, 7 years of division, correct? Mm-hmm. All of Sefer Shoftim. That's a big number. All of the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Well, actually, all of Sefer Shmuel, which includes the period of Shmuel, the period of Shaul, the period of David, which we know is 40 years, and then the 4 years of Shlomo. With me? These three numbers are questionable. All of this together, from Yeshua to David and to the building Beit HaMikdash, this is what we would call the period of the Mishkan. But the Mishkan isn't only in one place. Remember, the Mishkan is in Shiloh. Well, it actually starts in
Gilgal.
Then it gets moved to Shiloh. After the destruction of Shiloh, it goes to it goes to Nov, right? The Mizbeach. The Aron goes into exile, but the Mizbeach goes to Nov, and from Nov,
Givon.
And from Givon, ultimately, Shlomo HaMelech takes the Aron, brings it to Yerushalayim, and, well, Aron comes to Yerushalayim first. From there, it goes into the Beit HaMikdash. So that's the period of the Mishkan. So Chazal, in order to try to figure all this out, Chazal were curious as to how long the Mishkan stood in Shiloh. And the way they do this calculation is as follows. We know that there's 14 years of the Mishkan in Gilgal. That's Sefer Yehoshua. The end of Sefer Yehoshua, Yehoshua moves the Mishkan to Shiloh. Perek Yudchet of Sefer Yehoshua moves the Mishkan to Shiloh. So we're going to put this number here. Nov and Giv'on together gets a little complicated, but essentially Nov is Mishkan is in Nov, or the Mizbech is in Nov for 13 years. Chazal based that on a pasuk in the Sefer Shmuel, based on the total years of the reign of Shaul and Shmuel together, is somehow coming to 13. I'm going to leave that out for now, based on the Midrash. There's another way to calculate it, which is a pasuk in Shmuel, which talks about 20 years, which Chazal put as the 13 years of the Mishkan in Nov, and the 7 years
of
David of David's reign of Hebron, right, before he brings the Mishkan to
brings the Aron to Yerushalayim.
To Yerushalayim, correct.
Total
is 20 years. Total is 20 years, correct. These 44 years is essentially the time of Shlomo of David and Shlomo. First 4 years of Shlomo before he builds the Beit HaMikdash, where the Aron is in Giva. After Mizbeach, after Nov is destroyed, the Mizbeach is put in Givon, and there it remains until they build the Beit HaMikdash. So these are my fixed numbers, give or take. 44 years in Givon, 13 years in Nov, 14 years in Gilgal, 40 years in the Midbar. Subtracted out of 480 will give me this number. You with me? Beit HaMikdash built 480 years from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. In that period of time, I have 40 years in the Midbar. I have 14 years in Gilgal. I have 13 years in Nov, based on two references, but the simplest one is the one in Shmuel, where it talks about 20 years of the Aron in exile from the destruction of Shiloh until David brings it to Yerushalayim 7 years later. So that's 13 years. After the fall of Nov, the Aron goes to Givon, and there it will remain until the Mikdash is built, 40 years of David, 4 years of Shlomo. Add these numbers up, subtract them out of 480, and what do you get?
Yeah. 369.
Which means that the Mishkan stood in Shiloh for 369 years. That's the Gemara you have on the source page. I gave you the Gemara in Zevachim, which does all this calculation, but we're just in the first paragraph. Yemei Ol Moed Shebamidbar 40 Shana Chaser Achat. The Mishkan stood in the Midbar for 39 years. It was built in the second year, so it's 40 years minus 1. Yemei Ol Moed Shebagilgal 14. Sheva Shekavshu V'zayin Shechilku. The Mishkan stood in Gilgal for 14 years. Yemei Ol Moed Shebenov V'givon 57. If you take Nov and Givon together, 44 plus 13, you get 57. Nishtahu l'shiloh 371 chaser achat. Left, how many years did the Mishkan stand in Shiloh? 369 years. The rest of this Gemara is a lengthy calculation of how we get to this number. So I was curious why Chazal cared about this number. Who cares? Torah never tells us, Navi never tells us explicitly how long the Mishkan stood in Shiloh. Why should we care how this calculation operates? So, here's the other side of it. I mean, a lot of this is based on Midrashim, but for now, we'll operate with this. How many years is the Beit HaMikdash in total? First Beit HaMikdash stood for a total of how many years? Now I'm working backwards, right? We jumped from the Korban of Shiloh several hundred years, many hundreds of years later, and now it's just talking about the Beis HaMikdash of the Korban Beis HaMikdash and the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu. How many years did the Beit HaMikdash stand in total?
420. 400
and?
420
or 410? 410. By Cheney is longer, is based on the pasuk in Chagai, Gadol Yekvod Abayit Ezeh Acharon Min HaRishon.
Thank you.
410 years for Bayit Rishon. Because I'll give this number, that's how they calculate it, based on Seder Olam. How they get to this number is not my issue. It's the number that Masoret Chazal have for the life of the first Beit HaMikdash. Which, just as an observation, Shiloh stood for 369 years, the Beit HaMikdash stood for 410. So that they're not that significantly different. All right. Work our way backwards. How many years
prior to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was Yirmiyahu's nevuah of Kishiloya Beit Hazeh. When did he say these words? He said these words, Bereshit Mamlechut Yehoyakim. Agreed? Alright. Bereshit Mamlechut Yehoyakim, so we just need to know the chronology of the last three kings of Israel, Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, and Tzidkiyahu. Simple calculus, not particularly complicated. Too many psukim to quote. It's not particularly complicated. Yehoyakim reigns for 10 years. Yehoyachin reigns for 3 months. And Tzidkiyahu reigns for 11 years. Not complicated. Which means we are at 21. 21 years before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Yirmiyahu stood up and said, Kishilo Yabaitaza. You with me? Here's the only issue which is an optical illusion. All our calculation is from this date. Correct? 480 years, Melachim Aleph, Perak Aleph, Perak Vav, Pasuk Aleph, 480 years after they went into, they left Mitzrayim, they built the Beit HaMikdash. The piece that's missing here is how long did it take them to build the Beit HaMikdash?
So they had started while Shiloh was still...
They started it, right? Shiloh's destroyed here, then there's 13 years in Nov, and 40. There's 57 years after the destruction of Shiloh, they start the building of the Beit HaMikdash. But we know from Sefer Melachim that it takes them 7 years to build the Beit HaMikdash. This is the beginning of the construction. It takes them 7 years to build it. And then it takes them another 13 years to build the palace of Shlomo HaMelech before they open the doors of the Beit HaMikdash. One of the big critiques against Shlomo is that he delays the opening of the Beit HaMikdash until after the construction of the palace. So together, it's one complex. In Sefer Melachim, it's one complex, the Beit HaMikdash and the palace. It took a total of 20 years to build. That's text. I'm not fluffing the numbers. Right, there's the text. So if 410 years Chazal give from this date to the destruction of the Mikdash, in fact, how many years was the Beit HaMikdash standing in operation? How many years was the Beit HaMikdash operating? If it took them 20 years to build. And in total, it's 410. 390. So for 390 years, the Beit HaMikdash is a functioning building, except for the period of time when Menashe had closed its doors. But from the day it was inaugurated, from its inauguration through its destruction, is 390 years. You with me? 21 years before its destruction, Yirmiyahu issued his proclamation, Kishilo Yabaitazeh.
369 years.
Mm-hmm. 390 minus 21 is 369. In other words, when did Yirmiyahu declare Kishilo Yabaitazeh?
It was 369
when
years
the Beit HaMikdash was 369 years old. Because everybody knew. That's why I think it was so important for Chazal to calculate how long the Mishkan stood. Because I think they were working off trying to understand this. Yirmiyahu, and look, here's the irony of it. Everybody knows that Yirmiyahu is a remnant of the house of Eli from the city of Anatot. And from the days of Shlomo HaMelech when he exiled Eviatar back to Anatot, as a fulfillment of the Gzerah against Eli and the destruction of Shiloh. Anatot has been the symbol of this Gzerah. They die young, they have no role in the Mikdash, this Gzerah is sitting over the house of Eli. Yirmiyahu is a remnant of the house of Eli. He's a walking symbol of the gzera against Eli's household. And on the 369th anniversary of the operation of the Beit HaMikdash, exactly as many years as Mishkan stood in Shiloh, Yirmiyahu stands at the entrance of the Beit HaMikdash and is told by the Rebbeinu Shlomo, you speak these words and you do not leave out a letter. And he opens up his mouth and he says, Rabbosai, you see who I am? Hanavi Asher Me'anatot, the Navi of Anatot, the descendant of Beit Eli. And I tell you, Kishilo Ye'abayit Hazeh. 369 years, I would say, to the day. That's the impact that the Mishkan, the Churban of Shiloh, has for generations to come. Okay. In Zat Hashem, next week we.